This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
For a website, right, with SEO organic ranking, people are searching sell my house fast or people that buy houses in San Antonio, all that kind of stuff. They're actively looking for somebody to solve the problem they know they have. Right. A lot of times with the outbound stuff, you're doing direct mail, you're doing signs, they see that, but unless they're connecting the dots on the problem that they have and what the solution is, you're not getting a lot of them, right? Or you're getting people that are just, you know, what we would call tire kickers, right? They just want to see how much can I get, but they don't really feel like they have a big enough problem to take action enough to sell quickly. Mm-hmm. And so the online stuff, I love that because it's really most of the time they're showing that they have a motivation to sell.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. This episode is sponsored by Infinite Road Destinations, the smartest short-term rental property management group I know, and the group that manages my properties. This is a company that's very close to my heart, run by two of the smartest, most attentive people I know, Claire Rosenberg and Alex Brashears. Claire and I first met when we worked together at NetApp, where she was a top performer and rose crazy fast in the company. And Alex is just one of the most active, genuine people I know in the real estate space. The two of them together bring a blended background of project management, software design, and extensive experience with automation tools and virtual assistants. Through these experiences, they optimize any property to deliver a hands-off experience to owners while delivering the highest occupancy and highest daily rates possible. You guys know I would not recommend anything to anyone in this group that I do not fully endorse or think that is the absolute best product. And this company is that. And like I said before, this is the exact company and people that manage my Airbnbs. If you don't believe me, here are a few of the other tools and services that come along with the team: listing optimization, guest support and approval, communication and reservations, key exchange and management, dynamic pricing, welcome kit creation, listing advertising and marketing, vendor management, including cleaners, maintenance, handyman, runners, and monthly property reports. To learn more, check out shorttermmadeeasy.com or email info@shorttermmadeeasy.com. And on the form, just mention that you heard it here or mention my name. So give it a try. You have nothing to lose, and they offer a satisfaction guarantee. And I assure you guys, you will not be disappointed. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with a second time guest, Danny Johnson. Danny is in the San Antonio, Texas area and has done nearly 1,000 flip deals. He's also an author, wrote an awesome book called Flipping Houses Exposed. And he has created now a CRM called FlipPilot, basically the software that he felt he needed in his business and couldn't find out there. So I know a lot of you guys are playing around with different softwares of how to figure out moving leads through a funnel, and he has kind of cracked that code. So Danny's just a great guy. You could tell a lot of fun in this conversation, but just a really low-key kind of humble person, not in your face, not flaunting stuff, but he's done so much in this business that there's just a lot to learn. So we kind of dig into his marketing strategies, how he uses PPC, which is just basically kind of like Google keywords when you search for selling homes, and how he drives traffic that way and just kind of like built out his team. So it's a really interesting episode from that standpoint that we kind of talk a lot about marketing in the sense of how to just get off market homes into your funnel. And then we talk through also what it's like to move those through a funnel and how to manage them better and what to do with them once you have them. But just a really good show from the sense of how to find off market deals. I know a lot of people are struggling with that right now, and Danny has a system that works on a consistent basis. So I highly recommend you kind of take some notes or just check that out and follow some of his stuff. He puts a lot on his blog, and just a really good resource for all things kind of flipping and wholesaling. Today's tangible tip: if you need extra money and you have some time and energy, there is a free category on Craigslist or Facebook, and you can just pick stuff up and flip it. Like, it almost seems too easy or too good to be true in a sense, like if you need money, but people just want to get rid of stuff. Even like when I'm moving right now, there's a lot of stuff that like, I don't want to maybe go through the hassle of selling. And I would just either donate it or give it to someone that I knew would get good use out of it. And I would give it away. But I think a lot of people just don't know that option exists. So now you do know it exists. And if you want to make some extra money, you can find free stuff on marketplaces, pick it up, almost like wholesale it, find someone else to buy it, just get it in front of your audience and just sell it. And then you can make a profit on flipping stuff. And I know people are making thousands of dollars doing this and it's their full-time job. They just like the game of flipping and yard selling, garage selling. It's just fun for them. So there's no excuse. There are always ways to make more money. It's just a matter of how creative you want to be and how much time and energy you want to put into something. So that's today's tangible tip. Without any further ado, great episode today with Danny Johnson. See you guys. All right, Danny, welcome back to the podcast, man. How are you? How have you been? It's so great to see you again and have you back on.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate being on. And like we were talking about just a minute ago, the last conversation we had was at the beginning of COVID. So it's nice to have one now where things are a little bit different, you know, from that perspective. The questions aren't all about what do you think is going to happen? So,
yeah, that was really, I look back at that. That was just so like, I don't want to say annoying, but it was just like no one knew. Everyone was speculating and a lot of people just weren't doing anything. The people that stayed active, like, and again, it's different for every industry. And I'm curious if you kind of felt this too. But the people that stayed active, just they kept taking action. Like they maybe paused for a brief period of time just to kind of get their bearings. Okay, what's changed? What's stayed the same? But like most of the high level operators I know, they just kept taking action. So like, I'm just curious for you, like how did you kind of go through this last, actually, yeah, I want to hear that quickly. And then I do want to just kind of reiterate your background because you're coming from a place of a lot of experience, but yeah, just what was this last year like for you from a high level from last time we spoke?
Yeah, so the benefit that I had coming into this was I had, you know, slowed down on the house flipping quite a bit because I was working so much on the software. And so I didn't have this big team that I had to keep going. You know, I didn't have a team or I didn't have, you know, this overhead that I had to keep operating this big machine that was like going. So it was a little bit different for me because at the beginning of this, I was getting back into buying more. And my strategy was for buy and hold. I was looking more for, you know, properties that I was going to hold. So I wasn't so concerned with if the values were going to drop or the market was going to change too much. And, you know, I did buy some, actually most of what I bought ended up being stuff that, you know, was being flipped. And luckily the market had been, you know, increasing, improving, appreciating. So that worked out to my benefit. But from the people that I know that are very active here, you know, they just kept going and it was really, you know, with the understanding that things won't happen overnight to where it'll just fall out. Mm. Like there will be some signs and things can be, you know, action can be taken to you know, figure out what the new strategy is going to be or what's going to happen with current properties that they're working on. But I think it felt like a little bit of let's hurry up and get these things on the market, right? But, you know, I think, you know, and even last time, I think there were signs and people were a little bit more open to seeing the signs now, you know, more a little bit more aware because it's not been that long since the last, you know, issue with the real estate market. So
totally. It's going to still be interesting to see, but I feel like there's almost always a way to continue taking action and just sitting back and doing nothing is rarely ever the answer. You know, I feel like for most people, it just leads to a lot of stress or just resentment or just a lot of people, I think were really like bitter at the end of it, just like comparing themselves maybe to the people that kept taking action. So just a good reminder. Okay. So Danny, just before we get too far into this, I do want the audience to have kind of a footing again of who you are and just kind of your pedigree, just to know like how much you've actually done in this space. So even if you could quantify it in numbers or deals or units or kind of just from a high level of kind of your high level background in real estate.
Sure. So 2003 was when I got started, was part-time for about 3 years and scared to death to leave my software engineer job. So I was losing money because I was still at my job during that last year. And luckily the company I was working for let me go I think they probably got on that I was kind of, you know, I was pretty much prospecting at work, like I'm looking for deals, you know. So anyway, they let me go, which was the greatest thing that ever happened, because then it was free to really take off in the business. And since then, you know, but I love the fact that the first 3 years was part-time, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there wishing they were full-time right away, right? They want to quit their job and just go all at this. But the benefit of having those first 3 years was figured out the business and figured out that we could consistently get deals. Like everything was going to be okay. So I wouldn't stress and make a mistake because I felt like I had to get a deal, right? I think that could stress anybody out and they'll end up making a mistake because they, you know, it's just like, I have to have a deal, I have to have a deal. And then they're making mistakes, offering too much, padding, like increasing what it would sell for, just not even realizing that they're fudging their own numbers, all that kind of stuff. So it took that pressure off and learned how to do the important things, right? Figuring out what the important tasks were, because I didn't have all that time to do it because it was still part-time. So when the transition was into full-time, it was kind of beautiful because it was, I almost didn't know what to do with myself. It's like, I don't need all this time now, right? I've been doing this and growing the business part-time, figuring out sort of the 80-20, right? What are the 20% of the tasks that are producing the 80% of results, kind of got figured out during that time. So that was cool. But since then, close to 1,000 deals, rehabbed, wholesaled in San Antonio.
Got it. Okay. So we're talking significant volume. This isn't like one or two a year. This is probably over 1,000. So, okay. And I guess just kind of digging into your current focus now, just these conversations are great for catch-ups. Where are you spending your time and energy right now? You said before we can record that you're doing still a couple flips, kind of ongoing, and then you're also building a software business. So just if you could catch us up, what's kind of top mind for you right now?
Yeah. So the house business, I'm actually, again, see, I started up again, trying to get more rental properties and, you know, at the same time, still operating Lead Propeller, real estate investor websites, and, you know, which is a software company, and then also Flip Pilot, the CRM system, and trying to do all of that stuff with a small team, which is what I want. I don't want a large team. Gets to be a little bit overwhelming, and, you know, the fun factor starts to diminish after a while. So it's been interesting, but I'm taking a little bit of a break again on the real estate to then focus on the software stuff. And we've got some interesting things happening with that that I can't really talk about just yet, but you know, we're going to be highly focused on the CRM system with regard to taking a qualified lead and turning it into a deal. I mean, that's really where the focus is right now with that. And then as I get back into having more time from getting that set up and launched, I'm going to get back into looking to do long-term stuff, because, you know, as I look back, you know, it was great to buy houses, sell them quickly, get the big chunks of cash. But what I really like is looking at, you know, net worth and looking at the long-term investments and where those have gone, and just wishing I'd done more of those. So it's not too late ever to start and continue to do more of those.
So I'd love to hear what flips or types of deals you're focusing on now, because it's kind of funny. Like, I think the why people do things is really important, or just kind of interesting, you know, like why does Serena Williams keep wanting to win championships? Why does Tim Ferriss remove himself from the world? Like, all these whys I think are interesting. And I feel like for some people coming up, especially in our group, they want to just do as many deals as possible or as many units as possible. And it's kind of like, I think about essentialism, like a book by a guy named, I think, Greg McKean, but like from the concept of maybe less is more, or higher profits, lower stress, and you could still make a very comfortable living. And it's like, what are you going to do with the money anyway? Or why do you actually want this? And if it's, you want to build something massive for your family or a church, or you have massive dreams that you want to fly private every day, then you're going to need an engine to build that. But I'm curious for you, like, one, how did you kind of come to, okay, I'm only going to focus on doing a couple deals kind of here and there, or why you're doing them? And then what kind of deals are they? If you could kind of just take us through the mechanics of what type they are.
Yeah, so it's really based on ease. So I still generate the leads through my website. And so I don't have to do a whole lot for that. you know, those leads because the website's been built up over time. And so I get leads that come in from there. And so it's really at what happens with those leads. What kind of property is this? Is it something, because my strategy for rentals is a little bit different than most. I really kind of focus on having the rent payments cover like an 8 year to no more than 10 year amortized loan. So that payment, I'm not really making much cash flow at all right now, but that loan is going to be paid up with minimal interest within the 8 to 10 years, and the rent payments covering that. Mm-hmm. And so then I have, I don't have any debt on it, faster, it's paid off faster. So that's what I look at. So if the numbers work for that, I love it and I want to do it. Typically, that's the lower end properties. It's not the properties that are selling for $300,000. It's not, it's stuff that's maybe will sell in between, $100 and about $150 in San Antonio.
Got it. Okay. And
so just that's how I determine that. When it's outside of that, then it's more of a either wholesale or fix up and sell.
And just for those that don't know, you said your leads mostly come through your website. I feel like that's a foreign concept to a lot of people that are maybe listening right now, that they're thinking they need to do direct mail, cold calling, texting. They need to build out this machine. So how are you able to do it? Or what's the flow of leads coming to you through a website look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's taken time to get it organic. So, SEO, and that does take time, and especially with this much time where there's enough websites that have been around for a while, it will take, some time to get it ranking at the top for certain keywords that are going to generate enough traffic to get the leads. And so without a long talk about what SEO is and how it's done, it's kind of a little bit higher level conversation. I can talk about it. But really what this boils down to is committing to, regardless of whether it's using a website, direct mail, or Facebook leads or whatever you're gonna do, I think the bigger thing is just kind of figuring out what it is that you want to do and become the best at it. I mean, the problem is, I just had this conversation with John Martinez within the last month about how, what was it, the term? It was like, if every month or every couple months you're trying a new lead strategy, you're just playing around. Like you're not, you're just not getting focused enough to where you need to be to dial in. Because the guys that are getting consistent, they stuck with 1, 2, 3 things, and usually just 1 or 2 in the beginning, got it to the point where it really is consistent, and then they added on to that. So it's so tempting for all of us, and I get sidetracked hearing about something and say, I want to try that out. But if you don't have the other strategy that you're doing already dialed in, then, it's just a never ending thing that you're just kind of changing around and you're never really getting traction in any one thing. And all of it takes time and effort. And, when we hear about somebody doing a direct mail campaign, my friend Don Costa, great at direct mail, he loves talking about it, doing that kind of stuff. What he does will work for a lot of people, but some people it might not work for the exact same way that he does it. Right. And so, all of that stuff requires us to trust that maybe it'll work. We try it out, but then we start, changing it up and testing and seeing what works for us. Like what works, like what are my numbers? What am I getting? And can I improve those numbers? Right. So it boiled down to a lot of measuring. And in the past, I didn't measure a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Right. It was more of how many leads did I get? I don't have enough leads. Let me throw more money at the problem. Let me do more. Let me get more direct mail out. And thankfully, I really wanted to get my website ranking. So I focused a lot on SEO, and I just always continued to do that while I did the other direct mail stuff and the probate stuff. But so I think it's more of, I know it seems like it's so much more interesting, and you hear about success that somebody has with some sort of strategy, and it just seems like, well, if I just switch to that, it'll be easier. I don't think it's ever really easy. You just need to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a tricky concept to think about, because, there's a lot of general advice out there of stick with one thing versus pivot as the market changes or add multiple strategies. So I guess for you, and this is sort of advice for anyone that's listening or thinking this through of which strategies they're going to jump into, but like, why did you pick that one? Is that one that you had a personal interest towards of websites or PPC or like getting keywords? Did you have an interest in that, or did you just think it was going to be the most effective and you could drill down and stick with it? Because to your point, I think we have a lot of people that they'll try a new strategy every quarter and they won't see something through, and maybe they're not giving themselves enough time to know if they actually like that strategy and if it works.
Oh, that's a perfect question. Yeah, for sure. There's definitely multiple reasons why I chose a strategy. I was interested. Being a software guy, I really liked the whole online thing and knew that everything was going to be mostly online. But what I love most about that is the whole inbound versus outbound. Right. So for a website, right, with SEO, organic ranking, people are searching sell my house fast, or, you know, people that buy houses in San Antonio, all that kind of stuff. They're actively looking for somebody to solve the problem they know they have. Mm. Right. A lot of times with the outbound stuff, you're doing direct mail, you're doing signs. They see that, but unless they're connecting the dots on the problem that they have and what the solution is, you're not getting a lot of them, right? Or you're getting people that are just, you know, what we would call tire kickers, right? They just want to say, how much can I get? But they don't really feel like they have a big enough problem to take action enough to sell quickly. Mm-hmm. And so the online stuff, I love that because it's really most of the time they're showing that they have a motivation to sell.
Mm-hmm. Right? They're so reaching out and saying, I want to sell my house, because they were already looking to do it. They were Googling something that maybe said, how do I sell my house quickly? Or do you know what the typical searches are that end up routing to your site?
Yeah, so it's really combinations or different variations of we buy houses still, because a lot of people for a lot of times see all the signs and everything, and so they search for that. We buy houses, cash for houses is another big one. Sell house fast is a big one. And I was very sell my house quickly, my house fast, sell your house fast, or sell your house quickly. All those variations, those tend to be the ones that actually convert into leads. Right, because some of them can drive traffic, people searching for them, but the intent isn't really there. So you can get some stuff like, you know, how to do probate. Mm-hmm. Right, that's a little bit more of informational. Right, the intent isn't to necessarily sell the house. Right, so you can get some of those stragglers or some of the people that search that and really do have an intention of selling the house, but you're going to generate a lot of traffic that's not going to turn into a lead at the same time.
Got it. So this is something we were talking about a little before we hit record. Maybe if you could just from a high level talk through like what happens when someone clicks on the website or they come in. I assume there's a form on the website, you know, just basic information, but can you just walk us through kind of your funnel and then what happens with these people? And just for those that are maybe wondering exactly what we're talking about here, we're talking about marketing strategies for off-market deals. You can do whatever you want with these deals. You can flip them, wholesale them, wholetail them. You can put them on the market again. So basically, like, there's a lot of exit strategy, but we're talking about finding off-market deals. So Danny, can you just talk through kind of like what happens process-wise when someone fills out a form on the website?
Yeah, sure. And this is hugely important, because this is going to get, I want to talk and get into depth in this, because it involves what I think even experienced investors drop the ball on still to this day, and causes them to, because they don't have the deal flow that they need to generate the profits that they need or want, the tendency is to do more marketing. If I just did more marketing, if I just added this other marketing strategy, I could then get enough leads and then get enough deals and make the money that I want to make. But I think a lot of people don't even realize that they're leaving money on the table with leads that they didn't convert, and then they give up on way too soon. Mm. And so what happens when somebody visits the website and they are motivated enough to either call me or submit their information on the form is that will come to me. Obviously, if they call me, I talk to them and set up an appointment right away. And I can go fast with that and say that that's all there is to it, but there's really not. Like, there's some fine, subtle details there. If they call me, I'm picking up my phone. I am picking up my phone. I'm not letting it go to voicemail. I'm not letting it go to some call center, which is great if you can't pick up your phone, if that's the only thing option that you have. But somebody is live answering the phone, right? They're going to talk to that person right away. And the other thing there is I'm going to, in the conversation with them, find out what it is. I'm going to peel back the onion on why they're actually selling. Right? Because if I can understand their problem and talk to them about their problem in a way that shows them that I understand their problem. And most of the time it's not, I just need to sell my house. I mean, that's not the, that's the thing that they need to do to solve the problem they have. And so getting to the problem and understanding that, showing empathy, sympathy, if it's genuine, if you don't feel those things, don't try to act like you do, but listen to them, right? Like talk to them, take the time to talk to them, get information about the house, but really ask the questions and get conversational around why they're actually selling the house. And there's rapport being built there, right? And there's some trust being built there. And if you show that you understand their problem better or as much as they understand their own problem, then they're going to feel like you can probably solve this for me. Like you get it. You understand. You're the right person to talk to when I called you. And you set the appointment for as soon as possible. And a lot of times, you know, with the motivated sellers, a lot of times there's some embarrassment and shame even around their situation, around the house. The state of the house is in disrepair. It's dirty. And so sometimes they'll be hesitant to schedule the appointment right away. They'll be like, well, I need time to clean. It's like, you know what? Don't worry about that. I'm just there to look at the house. Judge, like, I get it. You know, we all like that kind of thing is takes up your time. It sucks. You know, I know like that's like that cleaning of the house wasn't the priority. That's understandable. Don't worry about it. I'm just there to look at the house. Oh, okay. Well, so if it's okay, I'll be there in 2 hours, right? Like you get that appointment set as soon as possible, because at that point, when we're getting off the phone, they're thinking, okay, this guy's coming over. I'm going to tidy up a little bit. But they're less likely to think, okay, let me call another person. Let me get as many people lined up as possible. They may have started that way and got to where they were calling multiple people. But if they didn't, if you're one of the first that they call or talk to, it's a lot less likely that they're going to be talking to somebody else, which is a great situation because, you know, you don't want, if you don't have multiple people coming to make offers, it's a lot more likely that you're going to be able to make an offer if they're ready to sell, get them signed at the appointment. But if they have other people coming, then you have that whole barrier of, well, I've got other people coming, so I don't need to decide on this right now, which is a tough situation or a tough decision for me to make, because I can just say, well, thanks for your offer. I'm going to wait till I get the other ones, and you got all that stuff to deal with. So there's those strategies of live answer calls, right? And setting the appointment for as soon as possible. If you're not able to set the appointment quickly and it's like the next day or something, text and remind them, be professional. Text and remind them the next day of the appointment, before the appointment, and say, tell them that you're looking forward to it and all that kind of stuff. If you have their email address, which is cool, whenever they submit the form through the website, you then have their email address a lot of times. And you can email like a credibility thing, like you can email some testimonials. And here's what's going to happen whenever I come over to the house, right? Just being a little bit more professional, building that rapport and going above and beyond what maybe other companies are doing. And then once the appointment's had and we make an offer, if they don't accept it right away, which most of the time they won't. So don't feel like if you're new in this industry or business, you could think, well, they didn't take it. I better move on to the next one.
I'm glad you said that, because that is a feat in itself to get a lead and get an in-person meeting or a phone meeting or whatever. And I think a lot of people put that on a pedestal that because I have a lead, that means I have a deal. Not the case.
Yeah, and right? So whenever it doesn't happen, then they feel like, oh man, I blew that deal.
Right.
But it wasn't really necessarily a deal.
Yeah.
So with the numbers, right, when people are talking about a numbers game, it's not, we did this many deals, we got these many leads, it means deals. It doesn't. Like the lead is only a lead. To me, a qualified, there's the difference, right? You have a lead and a qualified lead. A qualified lead is somebody saying, I want to sell my house. Can you make an offer on it? Not, I drove for dollars, found a vacant house, and that's a qualified lead. It's not a qualified lead to me. That's a prospect, right? That's something that could be a qualified lead if I get in touch with the person that owns it and they do want to sell and they do want an offer from me. Then it's a qualified lead. So that gets into like the numbers, right? The you know, you might hear a lot of people say, well, this is all a numbers game, right? And it really kind of is, but you have to know your numbers because yours might not be the same as the other guys that you heard talk about it. But when you don't have a frame of reference for what's kind of typical, it can be hard to know whether you're doing a good job or bad job. Mm-hmm. Right. And so whenever I did 34 weeks where I documented every single thing that I did in my business. And I was like, how many leads came in, why they were selling, how much they were asking, you know, what offer I made to them and all that kind of stuff. And during that 34 weeks, I documented, and that became that book, Flipping Houses Exposed. And that showed all of those for that 34 weeks. And the thing about that a lot of people tell me now, and even people that are like, have big real estate companies, big house flipping, wholesaling companies, you know, say that book kind of helped them understand how many leads it can take to get a deal. How many leads where people are saying, I want to sell my house, make me an offer, that turned into a deal. And so I always thought, oh, well, this is excellent. This is awesome. You know, everybody's, you know, seeing that, okay, I'm going to need more leads. Right. So in that 34 weeks in that book, when I was talking about that, there was 495 leads. Qualified leads, people saying, I want an offer for my house. Guess how many of those leads I turned into a deal?
Yeah. How many?
There was 11. There may have been two extra ones. I forget that maybe happened after the fact, but there were 11 deals that I documented in there. And so if you look at that 495 leads and getting 11 deals, the conversion rate is 2.2%. Like 2.2% of those leads became a deal. So that sucks. Like that's really horrible. So it showed in an exaggerated way that it takes a lot of leads to get a deal, but which is good and good for a lot of people. And it was a good start, but that really conversion rate sucks. And maybe if you're new, you could have the same experience where it's going to take you a lot of leads to generate the deals. But what's happening, right? What increases that conversion rate? That's where my focus has been. That's what I've been really getting into, is what are the things that increases that rate? Because a lot, I guarantee you, there's a ton more, probably at least 40 more of those leads could have been deals if handled properly.
Right? So,
and what is...
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, what is one of those deals worth to a lot of us? Right. And when you say 40 of them in 34 weeks in less than a year could have been deals also, like what? Like that's an insane amount of money, right? That was left on the table.
So for you, is there like, okay, let's say you have all these leads, right? I mean, they're not all at once, but for you, like from a criteria standpoint, is a lead meeting a certain dollar amount on an assignment or a certain potential spread on a flip? Like, how are you even, I guess, what's your criteria to know if it's a lead or not? But then even on the back end of that, because you might need to prioritize some more than others of what you're going to give your time and attention to. But for you, like, yeah, that lead could mean a lot. It could mean a huge amount or a very little amount. So how do you kind of think about what's worth your time or prioritizing those leads once you have them?
Yeah, and it's pretty simple because the only qualification I have for a lead I'm going to spend time on is that they want to sell their house. Mm-hmm. Right. So if they just bought it last year, they didn't put much down and it hasn't appreciated, there's no equity there, I'm not going to spend time beyond analyzing that deal just because I don't do short sales. I don't do, you know, any kind of thing where I'm trying to do some sort of creative real estate investing to make money on something that doesn't have equity. I don't like that at all. It leaves me locked into some strategy that could screw me eventually. And so I don't mess with those, but it's still considered a lead. Any lead that's got equity that I can do something with and you know, make money on in the flip. And that's, you know, 70-75% of ARV for the rehab stuff. Wholesale is probably about the same because people are paying as much as 80% or more mm-hmm. on wholesale, doing different strategies and stuff like that. So I treat all of the leads, I'm going to spend time on them. Now that does get to the point where you have trouble keeping up with it. And that's really what was going on during the 34 weeks and getting that many leads. I was so busy trying to get more leads and taking all those calls and analyzing all of those leads that I wasn't following up. And we've probably, a lot of us listening to this probably have heard that, right? Fortune's in the follow. Well, that's great, but what does that mean? Like,
yeah, what does
exactly
that mean?
Are you talking about, right? Fortune's in the follow. So does that mean I made an offer and the next day I'm going to call back and say, hey, did you consider my offer?
Yes.
That is a follow-up.
Without being annoying, right?
Yeah. And it's really, and I guess one thing is to get past that assumption that we're being annoying. You know, I think I do that. And a lot of people still don't do that. People sign up for our CRM system and they don't use the follow-up. And we have these Q&A calls and we ask people and they say, well, I don't want to seem salesy or pushy. And I feel like follow-up can be salesy and pushy. It's like, well, you need to get over that because it's like, that's your assumption. And it can be done in a way that's not salesy pushy. And you're like, you're losing out on deals. You're not helping the people you could be helping because you didn't check back with them constantly. And that doesn't mean like every single day, text them, email them and call them. They don't want that, right? But there's some level of understanding because you talked to them and found out why they were selling, what the deal was. You get an idea of how motivated they are and how much they need to sell right away, or whether they're just kind of like, well, you know, if I can get this much, I'll probably sell, but you know, I don't really have to. I might fix it up or whatever. Versus the person that says, I have to sell this right now. I'm done. I'm pissed. The tenant was threatening to kill me. I don't ever want to have a tenant again. Like all this kind of stuff. And that person definitely is going to sell, right? They're not going to sit around. They just want to be done with it. And there's a ton of other scenarios, but you can gauge what the motivation level is and whether that person probably will sell sooner than later. And you're going to do more messages and contacts with them after making an offer than you will with the person that's like, eh, maybe. Those will be longer term. No matter what, though, the follow-up needs to happen to where you keep doing it until either they tell you, you know, I'm going to, you know, sue or whatever, like just freaking stop contacting me. You know, then you can, you know, like take it and stop doing that, right? Remove them from your CRM system, sending the follow-up and stop calling them and all that kind of stuff. But most of the time people won't, you know, and they will just get those messages, either ignore them or they'll respond to them. And so you get to the point when you're doing enough of them that you can't possibly, because my system back then was like, I had a notebook, I think, and today's date was one page, tomorrow was the next page. And so if I made an offer, I would go one page over and put follow up with, and the next day maybe follow up with, and I would keep pushing them down as I followed up. Well, it doesn't take long before you can't possibly keep up with it. Right. And then you drop the ball. Like you may maybe do one or two follow-ups, but then you're overwhelmed and you can't keep doing it. So that's where getting something to do some of that automation, either having a spreadsheet set up and having a virtual assistant or even someone that you know, a family member, super friendly, just call, text, or email, or all of those over time with a sequence. That's just really simple, right? A text should not be some long, super long text that gets broken up into three different texts. Like a text is, you know, hey, you know, did you ever sell your house? Did you sell that house? You know, obviously a question, right? You don't text the statement because what is that? Like, they're not going to respond. But it's just like you would be texting a friend that was maybe selling their house and wanted you to make an offer on it. How would you text them? How would you, I mean, you wouldn't be all super formal. You would just be like, hey, did you sell the house? And they say, no, not yet, but I'm going to do this. Well, you let them know you're still interested. Okay, still interested, you know, if you guys ever decide you want to. And just keep doing that, right? And just checking in with you, so you see if you did end up selling it. And then, you know, people tend to like that. And guess what? What happens with people is the motivation level right at the time you made an offer may not be to the point where they're like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm ready. And so what gets them to the point where they say that if they weren't there when you made the offer? Well, it's time, it's circumstances, right? And so our messages, I don't look at follow-up as being, if I just say the right thing and hit them the right number of times, I'm going to get the deal. Like that's stupid. Like that is not like it ends up being that way when you're doing like selling something, but we're talking about somebody selling a house. Like there's a lot of, that goes into them finally committing to doing something that big. And most of the time it really is just staying top of mind. Like my follow-up messages kept me top of mind with them. They appreciate the fact that I kept checking with them. And so when something happens in their life where it pushes them over the threshold of saying, okay, I'm ready. Guess who they're thinking of? It's that person, the only one that still kept talking to them and didn't feel like, oh, okay, he didn't get the deal. Now he really doesn't give a crap. That person was just trying to get my house. You know what I mean? So it's best to change the mindset set and have the perspective switch over to, we're really helping them and we are, you know, they can choose to sell to us or not, but just sending some friendly messages is not salesy pushy and going to piss off a lot of people.
Danny, last question before we get you out of here, any hacks or tips or best practices if someone was looking to start with SEO or PPC for their marketing strategy or anything you wish you would have known starting out if you were doing it again today?
Sure, I'll do PPC because there was a really good one that cost me a lot of money because I didn't know it at first. Is with PPC, when you're doing keywords, you have the opportunity to do some broad match kind of keywords where it'll match similar words and things like that. And so you'll get a lot of searches that come in with the wrong intent. It's totally for something else. I think we had people sometimes like, what was it? Like horses. I forgot what the match was. It was a weird thing. But you can actually see a lot, you know, you can see the keywords that people that actually hit your ads, what they were searching. And then to go into the negative keywords and make sure that you put those negative keywords in so that you don't, you know, if someone searched for that negative keyword, it's not going to show your ad and you're not going to get that wasted click. Because there can be some that are similar. And you kind of deal with this sometimes when people are looking to list their house. And if you have some similar keywords that match with that, you can get a lot of people looking for a realtor and you're paying for those clicks. And so you keep an eye on what the search terms are. And if you look at those and you're getting a ton of them, you're paying for them and it's the wrong intent because they're looking for an agent or something, you can put those phrases that they actually searched into the negative so that you save money. Because the name of the game of PPC is really getting your cost per click down while still getting leads, right? Getting the people with the intent, like we said before, where they actually want to sell a house or get an offer for their house.
Love it. Danny, what is the best way for people to connect with you or learn more about you?
Yeah, so you can find me at flippingjunkie.com and then also Instagram, Flipping Junkie, YouTube/Flipping Junkie, all that kind of stuff. And then the podcast, Flipping Junkie Podcast, which I'm actually transitioning. I don't know when you're going to have this published. Do you know when you're going to publish this?
A couple weeks.
Okay. We're going to be launching a new brand for the CRM and actually a podcast. I'm going to have a new podcast focused on, qualified lead to deal conversion, that whole thing, because it's not just, live answering calls and doing follow-up. There's a lot of steps in the funnel where people are dropping it. And I want to really dive in to the specifics of that, because when we're able to convert more leads into deals, we don't have to spend more money, time, effort, and getting leads, right? We can get so many. And the whole name of the game is moving from feast or famine, where you're doing a ton of marketing, you get a couple, like a deal or two, you get focused on the deal or two, you don't do as much marketing because you're busy doing the deal, and then you're struggling to get the marketing going again so you can get more deals. It's feast or famine. You can't really have the freedom you want in this business, like having this business and creating freedom for your life by doing that. And I was on that for a long time, up and down, a few family. What it takes is getting the consistency, right? In order to do that, you have to, like we talked about before, focus on a marketing channel, becoming the best at that. But then every time you get a lead, you know that you've honed your skills over time to be able to best turn that lead into a deal. You know, because then you don't have to keep generating so many leads. So we're going to be doing all that. And if you want to find out more about that, you can go to forefrontcrm.com is where all that's going to be happening.
Good deal. Well, we will check all that out and link it below. Danny, thank you so much for coming on, man. Always fun catching up and seeing where you're headed and what you're up to. So just want to wish you the best of luck in 2021. And thank you again for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
See you later.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.